Welcome to Inspired with Megan Alexander. Hey, everybody, it's Megan. Thanks so much for joining me today. My guest is Amy Giel King. She is the founder of Square Peg Development, and it is a collection of companies that seek to support those previously incarcerated and prevent homelessness through employment, opportunity, and a supportive community. They celebrate the resiliency and capacity of the human spirit to innovate, to recover, and to rebuild. Amy is a married mom of two and joining me today from beautiful Seattle, Washington. Hey, Amy.
Hi, Megan.
I am in studio in New York City, and you are at a studio called Clatter and Din in Seattle. And is it That's true right. that you're basically next door to Safeco Field right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, where the Seahawks play.
So exciting.
Can you please just wave to Russell Wilson or Richard Sherman?
I would love to.
Let them know.
If they were there.
Yeah, right? Born and raised in Seattle, proud diehard Seahawks fans forever, right?
Me too. Yep. All the way.
Oh, I love beautiful Seattle, and I know this is a great time to be out there. I am so thrilled to talk to you about Square Peg Development. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, with most people on the podcast, their inspiration seems to always come through a journey. Oftentimes, there is a story that goes along with how you got to this moment and what you are doing. So, Amy, what led you to working with previously incarcerated individuals?
It wasn't really something I set out to do. I can be honest about that. My husband and I started a construction company here in Seattle about 3 years ago. My husband was a builder prior to that for quite some time, about 12 years prior. And of course, as I'm sure you know, the recession happened and our previous construction company went out of business. So we kind of went away for a while and reinvented ourselves in another city and tried some different things. And then a developer friend of ours asked us to come back to Seattle and start building for him again. Initially, we were very hesitant to do so, but then things just kind of fell into place and it felt like the right thing to do. So we came back to Seattle and started building. And what we found when we got here was that there's really a shortage of trades laborers. And I think that's true across the country, but it's especially true here in Seattle, where there's a lot of development and growth happening thanks to Amazon and Boeing and some of the bigger companies that are here. So as we started to expand our company and need laborers, we just had a really difficult time finding employees. So we actually encountered an individual who had his own construction company and wasn't really interested in the business side, just the building side, and wanted help with the business. And so we ended up merging companies with him. And he had 5 employees, all of which had a criminal background. And at the time, we were so desperate for workers that didn't really faze us. We just, you know, accepted it, no big deal. And then later down the road, kind of stopped and said, oh, what are we doing? Did we mean to do that? Was that intentional? And, you know, to be honest, we both grew up in environments where we just didn't have a lot of interaction or exposure to individuals who had been incarcerated or who had criminal backgrounds. And so it was just a whole new thing for us. But as we got to know and fall in love with the guys who worked for us, it just became something that we really enjoyed and that we really wanted to pursue. And as we heard their stories of reentry and the challenges that they face as they reenter society, then it became sort of a passion for us to see different opportunities become available to them and to see doors open to them that they otherwise wouldn't have. And it just seemed so wrong and punitive the way that we treat people as they release from prison. And so it became sort of a passion thing for us, but it also, of course, really helps our bottom line as a construction company as well. So mutually beneficial.
Yeah. So, wow. And a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
So you were just saying that your husband is in construction, needs help, needs employees. You see a real lack of available workers, people that have these skills that are available. Yeah. And so sort of out of necessity, you decide to merge with this other company. And then, so when did you find out? Did you know right away that they had come from time in prison? Or when did you find out?
We did. We found out immediately when we hired them. And it wasn't a hindrance to hiring them, but it was sort of a shock to us initially. Like, oh, we haven't done this before. Are we sure we want to do this? And we did a little research into, you know, what that might look like. And of course, as I'm sure you can imagine, we got a number of mixed reactions from the research we did as to whether or not this was a good idea. we didn't really have another choice at the time. So it was sort of, I hate to say, an unintentionally forced upon us. And then it became, now it's a very intentional thing. So we currently have 48, I think, individuals that work for our construction company. And 90% of them are all previously incarcerated and or recovering from an addiction of some sort.
Wow. And the company that you decide to work with and merge with, mm-hmm. what was their story in getting those employees?
Yeah. So the individual who started the company had spent some time in prison himself. And so for him, it was offering an opportunity to people who had come from the same place as he had been mm-hmm. and offering them an opportunity to do something different. And really, we learned most of what we know now from him, but also from all the guys. I mean, we hear their stories and we learn from their experiences in terms of what happens while you're in prison, what happens when you release from prison. And kind of the common story that we hear across the board is, you know, when you're incarcerated, of course, there's, you know, many of them say, I did something wrong. I made a mistake. I went to prison. I accept responsibility for that. I was punished and appropriately so. But then they say that the true punishment comes after release. And they often say the prison outside of prison mm-hmm. is worse because you can't get a job. You can't get a house. Oftentimes you can't find supportive community or your community and family has disregarded you or is gone. So they don't have a lot of the resources that the rest of us come by very easily. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where we jumped into action and thought it just shouldn't be this way, especially for people who are actively trying to do something different with their life and behave differently. And certainly there are lots of people who release from prison and face those barriers and they're so strong and so hard to overcome that they end up going back to prison either to survive or out of necessity because, you know, they need money or whatever. And as I learned more about it and I heard stories, I thought, gee, if it were me, I'm not sure I wouldn't do any different than they do. If you can't get a job and you can't make money and you can't feed yourself or your family and you can't get a house, what are you supposed to do? It sort of felt like we as a society were continuing to push them down in a way that then they could never recover mm-hmm. from their past. And that just felt wrong to us.
Yeah. What ages are we talking about too? All different ages?
Yeah, we have a mix. Most of our guys are younger. By younger, I mean anywhere from, you know, 20. I think our youngest guy was 20, all the way up to, we've got guys in their 40s and 50s. But most of the individuals that come to us are people who have had drug-related offenses or things that happened as a result of, you know, being associated with drugs. So we see a lot of that. So that criminalization of drug use, we definitely see a lot of fallout from that in our teams.
Yeah. And what kind of projects are you talking about in construction?
So we do residential and commercial construction. We do single family homes, townhomes, we do apartment buildings. And then we have a whole third party services team that was developed around individual guys who have specific skill sets. So sometimes guys will release to us who have, you know, experience with interior finish or concrete or framing or a specific skill set, and they're really, really good at it. And we'll just build a whole arm around them and we'll use them both for our internal work and we'll use them externally for other builders as well. And by doing so, we've created some additional job opportunities and teams so that we can employ more people and give them more opportunity.
Wow. I mean, this is so fascinating to hear you describe and to think about in terms of all the different things that you are tackling and working through. Obviously, there's the job. But then, like mm-hmm. you just mentioned, there's the sense of community, there's the support, right. there's the self-esteem issue of having a right. job to show up for, right?
Yep.
And being
yeah.
a part of a team. And then just pounding nails and literally building something. I'm thinking
yes.
getting your hands dirty and, you know, making a craft.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a huge piece of it that we found, again, not intentionally, was a lot of the guys that come out to us have construction experience or they're interested in construction because it's different, right? They can be outside, they're doing something active. I think that physical labor is good for them, but also there's that real sense of camaraderie. They're not stuck in an office by themselves. And I think, you know, one thing we have found a lot is especially for the guys who are also engaged actively in recovery from substance abuse, that sense of being alone, it can be very negative and have negative long-term consequences for them. And many of the guys that work for us have symptoms of being institutionalized, right? So really stripped of their identity, of their rights, of all things that speak to their humanity. And so we try really hard to return that to them in a number of ways that are both tangible and intangible. But one specific example that really is amazing to us and still blows my mind is, you know, we have a square peg, we call it square peg swag. So it's, you know, gear that we, t-shirts and sweatshirts and hats and stickers and things that, you know, we think nothing of. And I think, oh, there's a sticker with a square peg logo on it, big deal. And the guys are just obsessed with it and they buy it in bulk and they love it and they always want free stuff. And at first I couldn't understand that, but then we started to realize in asking them and talking to them that this has become their identity. They feel like they're a part of something that's bigger than themselves, that has a purpose. They're giving back to other people who come after them. That's kind of part of our policy, is they do this sort of natural mentorship cycle, helping the new guys that are coming out as they reintegrate. And I think that that gives them a sense of purpose, a sense of giving back to a society that they feel that they took from. And it also gives them something to feel a part of. We talk about Square Peg like a family, and we tell them, you know, we'll take care of you, you take care of us, we're all in this together. And so as opposed to traditional employment groups or companies, we sort of have this different atmosphere of a family where we go a little deeper than most and we help them with things that most companies wouldn't. But we also try to provide something that they're a part of, something that's big and whole and inclusive and accepts them as they are despite their past and their choices.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting as you're sharing this, I'm thinking it's one thing if it's one person that tries to integrate into a company with a new job, but they're the only person that has come from being incarcerated or recovery. It's another thing if you move into a community where you can share stories with each other. Talk about, and you just mentioned mentorships and helping the younger guys as they come in. That must be so interesting to have a community, a team of guys who can relate and understand what the person next to them is going through.
Yes.
That must be pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. And honestly, this comes up a lot and people will ask me all the time, you know, how do you help them? And how is it that you succeed in this model? And I always tell them, I'm not personally doing anything. I can't take any credit for this other than I'm providing an employment opportunity. They're really the ones who take it to the next level. And they are so engaged with each other in a way that I could never engage them. I've never been incarcerated. I've never, you know, I can't relate in the way that they relate to each other. And I really appreciate the way that they care for each other and treat each other like brothers. Mm-hmm. And it has really shaped that family atmosphere. And when we first started doing it, you know, there were a number of agencies that came to us and said, you know, you need to be careful. You don't want to put them on the same teams and you don't want them together. And I think that's sort of that societal thought around, you know, once a criminal, always a criminal. And they sort of had this mentality of, if you put them together, they'll start to form groups and packs and they'll criminalize. And we haven't seen that. We just haven't. And I think, you know, we have the occasional individual who comes out and just isn't engaged in recovery. And they usually end up either reoffending or relapsing and we lose them. But for the most part, we have an 86% retention rate and the guys stay with us. They love being a part of this. They love helping other people. And it just, you know, they give something to each other that I can't give to them or you know, anyone who hasn't been through what they've been through can't really offer them. And so I think putting them together actually was one of the best things we could have ever done.
You just mentioned some agencies, you know, were warning you and saying you got to be careful. How did you respond? And I'm sure you still get naysayers and people that say, ah, this could be dangerous. What are you doing? Yep. Not a good idea. And like you mentioned, they simply maybe just don't want to work with someone that has a record. How do you respond to the naysayers?
Yeah, so we get a lot of feedback, both negative and positive, but we do get some negative feedback. And I think, you know, often I'll tell people that a big part of what we do is advocacy and education around individuals who have been incarcerated and are releasing from incarceration. And I think it's important that we change that stigma around people who are deserving of a second chance. Certainly there are people who are incarcerated today who have done horrible things. And maybe there's, you know, certain circumstances where people would think a second chance isn't warranted. And I, you know, I'm not one to argue that in certain circumstances, of course, but in this case, you know, like I said, the majority of the guys who work for us have drug-related offenses, and many of them, you know, are actively engaged in their sobriety. They're acknowledging the mistakes and choices that they've made. Some of them were just in the wrong place at the wrong time, doing things that a lot of kids and young people do. And, you know, the going to prison and being incarcerated has a very significant impact on the rest of your life for a number of reasons. And I think, you know, a lot of these individuals just need an opportunity to be seen or observed by society in a different way. And so a lot of times when people come to us and say, why would you do this? Or, gee, isn't it unsafe or dangerous? Or what about your children? You know, things like that. My response to that always is, do you know these people? Have you met them? Have you talked to them? And I think, you know, it's really important for us to continue to reinforce that not everybody who is incarcerated or experiences incarceration is a bad person. And in fact, you know, we have learned a lot that the concept of bad has really changed for my husband and I and our family in terms of do good, be good, therefore you are good. I think there are lots of really good people in the world who go through bad things or have had bad things done to them, and they're responding to something in their past. Or again, they were maybe in the wrong place at the wrong time. And so kind of changing that mentality around assuming who people are based on where they've been or the choices they've made, but challenging the people that we meet who are the naysayers to really learn to understand people. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a common thing we state in our companies. We say, before you judge, seek to understand. And it's not our place to judge other people. And certainly the people that work for us are all on board with that. They totally agree with that statement and they're all about it. What we find is people who haven't experienced it are usually the ones who are coming to us and saying, are you sure about this? Do you really know what you're doing? And usually when I tell them, why don't you come on down to our shop and meet one of our guys and have a conversation with them, which a lot of our guys are really open to. And usually I have yet to meet someone who has met one of our guys or had a conversation with them and walked away feeling the same about people who are coming out of prison. Wow. I think there's a lot of really interesting stories there that people need to hear, and educating people, advocating on behalf of the people that we love now that are part of our family is really a big part of what we do.
Yeah. Wow. You have posted on social media, and I follow you on social media. And when I was preparing for this interview, I saw you post that you were so proud of your first adoptive son.
Yeah.
And it was one of your employees. Mm-hmm. And that concept of family, I was thinking, wow, to belong. And you have shared about belonging and finding purpose and finding meaning. First of all, the first adoptive son, what's the story behind that? Was that one of the first gentlemen that you hired?
He was, yeah. He was our first official employee. And he was actually before we merged with the other company. So I got to give him credit. He was the very first one who got suckered into working for us. And he is just an amazing man, an amazing story, which I won't tell on his behalf. But he, you know, basically has overcome so many obstacles. And I'm just really, really proud of him. He's been able to regain custody of his children. And he's celebrating many, many years of sobriety. And just, you know, really re-engaging as a father, as a man, as a soon-to-be husband. He's engaged. And I just am really proud of him in the way he's overcome everything that's happened to him in his past. And we hear that story a lot. And it's just a common theme is when these guys start to accomplish things that the rest of us take for granted, I think it's just a huge accomplishment for them. And it should be because, you know, we put walls up for them that are really hard to overcome. So I always want to celebrate that with them, that, you know, to be able to not become overwhelmed by all the barriers you face and be able to get to the other side of that successfully and build your family and build your future is just a huge, I mean, I'm so inspired by them. It's a huge undertaking. And he is a great example of that. He's been with us for 3 full years now. And he actually, I mentioned on there, it's a little bittersweet for me. He just accepted a position with the union. And so he's moving on from us, which is a great success story for me. He's going on to another company for more money to better support his family and to do something, you know, expand what he's learned with us into another industry. And I think that's fantastic. We love that. We're sad to see him go because he's like, all the boys are like sons to me and love them with all my heart. And so I hate to see him go, but I'm also really proud of him and I'm happy for where his future's taking him.
Is that the ultimate moment to see him move on truly back into regular life, if we want to call it that or whatever?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, it's kind of like, well, you're a mom and, you know, it's as a mom, they are like my children. And so I always say it's like watching them fly out of the nest is really exciting, but also really sad. And so it's hard to see them go. And some of them stay with us and have been with us. And there are some who say, I'll never leave and I'm going to be a square pegger for life. And, you know, that's also a success to me that they're so happy and comfortable here and they love what we do enough that they want to continue to give back. And those are the people who have risen into leadership and continue to rise and will continue to feed our mission, a long-term mission. But I don't expect everybody to do that. We've had a number of guys move on to other jobs. And yes, it's always a big success story for us.
Sure. What would you say is the biggest challenge that you face?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there are two things that I get this question a lot. The biggest one is what you mentioned before. So there are a lot of naysayers and people who just don't understand why we would do this, have a lot of questions or concerns about, you know, why we would employ individuals, why I let them have a key to my home and let them come and go from my house and sit at my dinner table, hold my children. So that's a challenge we face, but it's not an overcomable challenge. Again, it's just about education and teaching people about where people come from and their stories and that not everybody fits underneath the same stereotype. So I don't consider that a challenge as much as an opportunity, but it's definitely the number one thing I end up answering. And then the other challenge that I face internally, that we face internally as a team, is just falling in love with our guys and getting connected to them. And then certainly, of course, we lose some either to another company or back. You know, some of our guys do relapse or have issues with family or various situations where, you know, we lose them, they go back to incarceration or off to other places. And I'd say that's probably the greatest challenge that I face is becoming too emotionally connected to them and seeing them go. Mm-hmm. That's really hard. And it's very untraditional for a normal company. You know, usually you see employees come and go and it's, you know, no big deal. And for us, it's a little more like losing a child and it's hard. But, you know, the company carries on and life carries on and it's, you know, everyone steps back into place and continues. But it's hard. It's definitely a big challenge.
You have two young daughters. Mm-hmm. I have two young sons. We both have young kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious about conversations that you've had with your girls, with your daughters. Mm-hmm. Just questions they probably have when they start asking what mommy and daddy do and what mm-hmm. the company's all about. Mm-hmm. And I love how kids bring things down to such a just basic, real level. Yeah. You know, they're bold and blunt sometimes and just ask questions. And that can be such a beautiful thing, though. No beating around the bush.
Yeah, right.
Talk about some of the conversations you've had with your kids.
Yeah, so we do talk about it a lot with our kids, and they are very familiar with a lot of the guys who work for us. And they, you know, they get a lot of questions from their friends at school. My 10-year-old especially gets a lot of questions from her friends at school. And I think it's always cool to hear her answer to how she answers their questions. And, you know, I think the big thing we always try to teach our kids is the same thing that we try to teach other people when they're asking us about it, which is, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover and you can't make a determination about someone without really knowing their story. And so a lot of times we'll talk to the girls about the idea of both compassion and understanding, just taking the time to really know and learn about the person that you're faced with, right? It comes up a lot in just their everyday lives too, and their interactions with other kids, and they come home and say, oh, this happened today. And we talk about, you know, gee, why would that person act that way? And what motivates that behavior? And I think that really plays into the bigger picture of what we're doing. And I hear my kids repeat those questions to me sometimes when I'll be complaining about something that happened at work with an individual. And they'll say, you know, well, gee, mom, what do you think motivated that behavior? And then we kind of dig into the whole, well, okay, this person, you know, spent 8 years in prison and, you know, has a bad family story and was abandoned or abused or whatever. And we talk really openly with our kids about, you know, within reason, but about the things that our guys have faced and about the things that they have done. And we just talk about, you know, people make mistakes and people make choices sometimes, and there are consequences to those choices, but the choices don't define you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a big theme in our family as a result of where we've walked over the course of my husband and I over the course of our marriage and our many experiences in life. But that trickles down to our kids, and it's amazing to me to see them have conversations with other kids or answer questions to teachers even or other kids at school about what we do. And that's kind of what they always come back to is, you know, mommy and daddy help return people's humanity by reminding them that their choices don't define them. And, you know, to hear them summarize it that way just blesses me in so many ways. And I love that they're carrying that on.
Mm. Oh, that's so beautiful. I heard a sermon once where somebody said, make your mess your message. We all have messes, right? Mm-hmm. Life can be messy. People are messy. But whatever happens, try to make that mess your message. And I feel like that is what you guys are doing. Okay, there's your mess. Now, what are you going to do with it? Right? What are you going to do next?
Right.
Just to break it down for people too, I'm talking with Amy Giel King, and she is talking about Square Peg Development, which is a collection of companies that seek to support those previously incarcerated and prevent homelessness by giving them employment in a community. It's made up of a bunch of different companies. Can you name them all and how they're all connected real quick?
Yeah, absolutely. So Square Peg Construction is our primary company, and I've talked about that a little bit already. So we do residential, commercial construction, and third-party builder services. And it also, it does a number of additional things. We do metal fabrication, specialty excavation and dirt works, you know, all kinds of stuff, roofing. And then the other company, primary for-profit company that we have is called Pallet. It is a social purpose corporation, and it basically, we do design, manufacturing, and development of homeless and disaster shelters. So we came up with an idea for a shelter, primarily for disaster response, but it's also being utilized in the homeless housing market. And my husband came up with the idea, and we decided to go for it. So it's patented or patent pending right now, and we're really excited to see it used in the city of Tacoma to house homeless individuals there. And then we're talking with some federal agencies as well about utilizing the shelters for disaster response. That also gave us another employment opportunity for individuals. So manufacturing jobs, lots of individuals coming out of prison have experience with welding, metal fabrication, assembly, CAD and engineering. And we have a great engineer on our team who loves to help teach people. So there's a lot of teaching opportunity to teach these guys new skills and things that they can use for future jobs.
Yeah.
And to make themselves more marketable as they move on in their life. And so Pallet was really motivated by providing another type of industry experience or opportunity. And in turn, we also got to do something cool by creating a shelter for people who are in need.
Yeah.
So that's something that we are really excited about. It's really new. We just launched it and we're excited to see it unfold. And then we also have a company called Weld Seattle, and that is a nonprofit organization. And it basically provides housing opportunities, supportive community resources for recovery, for connection, you know, all kinds of different things. So we sort of serve as this central entity for people who are engaged in reentry, and we try to provide the extra help they need to overcome those barriers. Like I said, a lot of times it's really overwhelming, the amount of things that they have to kind of check off their list and go through in order to get back into getting a job, getting a house, and having what we would consider a normal life. And so what we do is to kind of take them by the hand. We create a reentry plan for them. And we help them step by step kind of go through those things and say, okay, what do you need? You need to get your license back. You need to find a place to live. You need to reconnect with your family, make amends with these people, whatever. And we, you know, we go through and help them kind of check those boxes off so that they can feel like they're ready and re-engaged in society and prepared to succeed.
Wow. You are one busy lady.
Yes. But I like to be busy, so it works for me.
And doing so many incredible things. And you have big launch party coming up, I understand. And this is for Weld?
Yeah. So Weld, we're just in the beginning stages with Weld. And it's we just got our applied for our 501c3 designation, which we're expecting to receive our letter from the IRS in the next month here. But in October and November, somewhere October, November, we're going to throw a launch party. We're really excited about it. And we've had some really good support from the governor's office here, from the city council, from a number of other groups that work with individuals who are engaged in different types of reentry. And so we're working on some strategic partnerships and fundraising, basically. Right now, we provide mostly services to our individuals who work for our entities, but also to individuals who are connected through the pipelines by which we receive individuals who want to work for us. And so we're trying to expand to more groups. Really, the mission of Weld is to prevent homelessness by providing the resources that are needed for individuals who are engaged in reentry. So they're people who are more inclined, statistically more inclined to end up homeless or incarcerated. And we want to grab them at their point of reentry and provide them opportunity and resources to not go that route. And so we're basically, as I'm sure you know, there's a homeless crisis here in Seattle, as there are in many, many cities across the country. If you speak to the individuals who are homeless, there's often a really large population of those are individuals who have a criminal background, and they're there because they can't get housing or jobs. There's a number of other reasons as well. But what we want to do is stop that increase of homelessness, as well as addressing the current issue of homelessness, which we're trying to do through Pallet. So for Weld, what we want to do is really expand the mission. We have a really big vision and dream that's probably crazy, but it's our vision and dream to see Weld spread across the country. We specifically named it Weld Seattle because we hoped that someday there would be a Weld Portland and a Weld Boston and a Weld New York and, you know, fill in the blank. And what we
You're
want
dreaming
is to
big. I love it.
That's right. That's right.
You have to.
And I just think, you know, what we're doing is important. And our teams are so great at engaging guys.
Sure. And other cities absolutely have this problem and need solutions too. So it makes sense.
I think there are probably some groups who are doing similar work, but we just thought, gee, you know, if we can come up with a system that works, which we feel like we have on a small scale, we want to scale that out to a larger population all across the country. I mean, incarceration is a huge issue.
Sure.
All across the country, it's 1 in 3 people in America have a criminal background. And if you think about that, that's a lot of people.
That
right?
is a crazy statistic.
It is.
1 in 3.
And 1 in 3 people have a criminal background. And if you think about it from that stance, you think, gee, we have this crisis of homelessness. We have crisis of job loss, right? And so as I'm thinking from the high level about those things, right? How do we both prevent that and deal with the issue that we've already created, right?
Yes.
And so we are very intentional about, even with Pallet, our company that makes the homeless shelters, you know, at one time we looked at, do we make big capital purchases and invest in technology so that we can get the same product every time and you know, be more efficient, and which is kind of the traditional corporate structure, right?
Sure.
And when we stepped back and looked at our mission in comparison to our profitability, we said, gee, we can still be profitable and avoid that investment in technology and turn that money instead to investing in people.
Yes.
And what we did is we manualized all of our processes for the most part. And instead of investing in capital, we employed more people and we created more jobs. And what we wanted to do, what we'd love to do, is show that model across the country and say, you know, as a society, we've really moved towards technology, which is important in a lot of industries. In our industry, it's really not. And there's a way to create jobs and avoid technology and provide opportunity for people. And if you see your people as a part of your bottom line and not just profits, there's a whole world of opportunity that opens both for me as an employer, but also for the individuals that work for me.
Yes. Do you have any dream partners you'd love to work with? This big launch party coming up, any dream celebrity guests?
Yeah. We've been chasing after Macklemore, trying to get him to come and work with us.
How's that going?
He's really busy. And we've know some people who know him and have reached out to him, and he's going on tour, so I know he's a busy guy, but he's someone who's been very honest and vocal about his own recovery. And I think for our guys to be able to celebrate their own recovery with someone like that, who's very, you know, public facing, I think is really important and cool. And
that'd
so
be huge.
even if it wasn't him, which I mean, he's local, right? And he's a Seahawks fan. And he's everything that we embody in Square Peg. And so we would love to have him.
Well, listen, they say that we are all 3 people away from anyone we want to meet. So friends listening, does anybody know Macklemore? Let's make this happen.
That would be amazing.
You never know. Contact us and let us know.
Amy, totally.
This is so incredible to hear about. And I'm thinking people around the country that are listening right now, if they want to get involved and they're curious how it works and partner with you in some way, what's the pipeline? How can they get connected?
Yeah, so we have websites for all of our companies, so they can go to those. For Weld, our nonprofit, it's weldseattle.org. On that website, you can kind of see what our mission is. You can see the different programs that we have. You can also make donations, express interest in participating in our launch party. Again, we want that launch party to be like a huge celebration of recovery and humanity. And so everyone's invited. It's a big open public party, and we're super excited to have people come and support the cause of reducing recidivism and preventing homelessness. And then for our other companies, if people want to learn more about what we do, and possibly, you know, one thing that we like to participate with too is in investing in companies who want to help provide job opportunities and resources to these individuals. So employers who are interested in providing employment opportunities for these individuals, but have questions or concerns or fears, we're more than happy to talk to you, consult with you about how to do that. And they're a great resource. They're incredible workers, very hardworking. So if you're interested in that, you can go to squarepegseattle.com. And people can also reach out to me directly. I'm more than happy to answer emails, take phone calls, whatever.
Perfect. Will you do that again and just give the websites and just like one sentence for each of them if I want to put this on the end? So I'll just ask you again. Amy, if people have questions, they want to get involved, they want to partner with you, where can they go for more info?
Yeah, so they can find information about our nonprofit at weldseattle.org. And our other organizations go to squarepegseattle.com. They can also reach out to us via email or phone. All of our contact information is on the websites.
And as I mentioned earlier, Amy is in Seattle right now, very close to Safeco Field where the Seahawks play. I was born and raised in Seattle, beautiful city. What's your favorite Seattle hotspot? Where do you like to go to relax?
Relax. Well, it's not Seattle, but the San Juan Islands, of course, are my favorite. So if I could go anywhere, I would just hang out in the San Juan Islands. But within the city of Seattle, I actually love Pike Place Market. I love how busy it's super cliche, but I love how busy it is. Yes. And it's just kind of the quintessential Seattle place to hang out, have a coffee and enjoy the water. So,
yes. Oh, I love Pike Place Market. Have you ever caught a fish?
I have, actually.
I never have. You did? That's awesome.
Yeah, but you smell like fish for the rest of the day, so that's not fun.
But it's so quintessential Seattle. I think that's cool that you did it. One of these days, I still need to. You must be well-read. What's your favorite book?
Gosh, I have a lot of favorite books.
Got to choose one.
Right now I'm reading a book called People of the Second Chance by Mike Foster. Fantastic book about all the things that we're all about, not judging people and hearing people's story and getting to know the background of where they come from. I also love Anything and Everything by Glennon Doyle. She's my hero. Love her.
Yes, she is fabulous.
Yeah.
We are both warriors.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I like to ask folks on this podcast just a favorite quote or something that was said to you in your life that you just hold close and inspires you. It's your, you know, motivation to keep waking up in the morning and doing what you do. What would be that for you?
Yeah. So one thing that really inspires me, I neglected to bring it. I wrote it down, my quote, and I didn't bring it in here with me, so I can't do it verbatim, but I am really inspired by the story of Les Mis and always have been. And I think it's really applicable to what we do, but also to my own experiences of second chances in life personally. And there is a quote in there. Victor Hugo says, people react to what's happened to them and to their background. And he talks about how we as a society are culpable for creating darkness for people. And people are going to react, you know, negatively to the darkness that surrounds them. And so we as a society are responsible for shedding light. And that's something that really is important to me, in both in what we do, but also in my life, to say, I don't necessarily want to hold someone accountable to something that was outside of their control. And so I want to spend the time to know and understand people and really seek to know and love them for who they are and what they've experienced, and help them to make different choices in the future.
I think the musical Les Mis perfectly illustrates that story of choices and consequences and second chances and grace and the law. And how do we figure this all out in this crazy, beautiful, you know, messy thing that we call life. So you were right on with that. That is one of my all-time favorite musicals, too.
Yeah, me too.
And such a beautiful story of life. And well, Amy, I so appreciate you coming on this podcast and sharing what you and your husband are doing with Square Peg Development and how you are indeed giving people second chances, which you have just shared. You know, everyone has a story and everyone deserves to have a second chance. And I think the takeaway for me is something that you said you share with your children. Before you judge, seek to understand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So thank you for giving us that inspiration today. Best of luck.
And thanks for having me.
Congratulations with everything that you're doing already with Square Peg Development. And Macklemore needs to hear about it.
Yes.
He needs to get there.
Yes. Thank you, Megan.
And I just want to add here at the end that I am so very proud of my friend Amy, because I have known her since seventh grade. Mm-hmm. We went to the same junior high and high school in Seattle, King Schools, and played on the same volleyball team in high school. Amy, I got to tell you, first of all, I'm so thrilled and so impressed and so proud at all you are doing. I mean, this is amazing. Congratulations. You're living life and living the dream. I it's so fun to have you here because I can't really tell this to that many people. Do you know that I dream more about high school and our volleyball team than anything else in my young teen years? I don't dream about college. I rarely dream about my 20s and early career. I dream about tryouts for volleyball or something that happened in high school. Am I crazy?
That's hilarious.
What does that mean?
I don't think that's crazy.
What does that mean?
I think it was the best time of your life, I think. It must be. I mean, I know it was a great time in my life, but that's pretty funny. I haven't heard that before. Maybe you were intimidated in the volleyball thing. I don't know.
I'm telling you, I need to talk to somebody about it because there's some reason. And I wake up and I say to my husband, I dreamed about high school again. He's like, volleyball team tryouts? Yeah. Well, and listen,
isn't that funny?
There were so many memorable moments, and I'm so thankful for that experience because our Coach Hubble, and I had a chance to say this to Mr. Hubble a couple of years ago when I went back to our high school. Do you remember that he used to oftentimes start practices with a quote or a saying? Mm-hmm. And I went up to him a couple years ago and I said, Coach Hubble, I'll never forget you started a practice once and you said, attitude is the mind's paintbrush. Mm-hmm. It can color any situation.
Yeah.
And I still think about that and apply it to situations in life. So I think I think it's those moments. Those are defining moments growing up and camaraderie and teamwork. And
We were there. Such a good community there, right? I think that's a part of it too. It's all about community and relationship. That's what life's all about. And gosh, we had so many good, amazing relationships there in that community, you know? So I think that maybe that's part of it too.
I think so too. So shout out to Kings High School in Seattle. We love you so much.
Yep.
And I know you're so proud of your girl, Amy, like I am. Thank you so much, Amy. And to all of our listeners that joined us, hey, I hope you appreciated and enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Until next time, everyone, stay inspired.